You know that song, Me Being a Sailor, and talking about lighthouses. Bruce, the other Sunday, was talking about lighthouses. Over in the Far East and around Vietnam and the Philippines and Japan, lighthouses are a very, very important part for navigation. And it's not just one lighthouse you're looking at. Every lighthouse has either a horn or a different sequence of the way the light blinks to be able to identify who they are. And then whenever you approach them to be in the safe area, you get the right sequence of lights that you follow. But that has nothing to do with my lesson. I just figured I'd bring that up. I told Dick that I was going to talk about him tonight, but I'm going to talk about myself too. So, like Bruce says, I don't have steel-toed shoes, and maybe I should be wearing them. But there's a word in Japan they use. It's called karoshi, C-A-R-O-S-H-I. And what it means is death by work. And at the end of the war, the Japanese economy grew so rapidly. I mean, it grew so rapidly because the U.S. had sent people over to help bring the economy back and teach them how to do different styles of work. And so the Japanese, they grasped that. I mean, they loved it. And they took off and they worked hard. And they worked so hard that they actually had all types of health problems and died. And we sit and we look at that and we say, how can a group of people work that hard and end up killing themselves? Right now, the Japanese actually subsidize the widows of karoshi men that have died with a pension, and it's called a karoshi pension. And there's about 30,000 a year, which is added to those ranks. We as Americans, we have a tendency to overwork. Just recently, I went through a little episode with my heart and things. I know that Dick has. And I can guarantee you what it's from. It's from overworking. I spent many, many more hours of working than what I should have worked. And I bet you Dick did too. He was probably traveling and talking and doing different things like that. And I know that I find myself at times wishing I could go back and recover the lost time that I had, to where I spent so much time away from my family working, because I missed a lot of my kids growing up. And like I said, that's the reason why I'm saying I'm stepping on my own feet. And I know Dick probably did too. My kids, I try to emphasize to them about how important it is to take care of your family first before you take care of doing the work that you're doing. And I have to say that both of my kids, even though they're hard workers, they're trying to spend the time with their families that they should. Because they knew what it was growing up around me, because I was never there. I ended up, the one thing I liked to do is I would find a power plant was being built, and I'd go and work there. And I'd go through the construction and setting up crews and doing things like that. And I'd put 12, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just work, 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 work. And what did I do that for? Why did I work and do that much? I was dedicated. I wanted to impress people. I wanted to climb the corporate ladder. I wanted to advance. And the other thing I wanted to do was to give me security in the end. But at the time, I was killing myself. I didn't realize that. And if there was young kids in here, I'd tell them, be careful with what you do and how hard you want to work for a company and how much time you want to put into it. Because it could be a scary situation. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and we're going to go through 4 through 16. And the teacher, which I feel is Solomon, but it doesn't tell you that, people, so I'm not going to say it's Solomon. But the teacher, he gives us a little bit of insight on what we should be expecting. He actually set it up in these verses. There's three separate things that he's wanting to emphasize. And the first one we're going to talk about is choice, contentment on choosing, and contentment on overachieving. So we got to choose what we want to do. Do we want to be overachievers, or are we going to be happy with what's happening to us in our life? I remember when I grew up, or was growing up, my father says, "You know, son, I am far better off than what I was. My father was. I have, you know, climbed a little bit higher on the economic ladder." My grandfather said the same thing. My grandfather was a coal miner back in Kentucky, and he used to crawl out of the hole in a coal mine, you know, and it was tough work. I think of a song, and I had his name on the tip of my tongue. 15 tons of number 9 coal, Tennessee Ernie Ford. Yeah. And he worked, the song goes about how hard he worked. And what he did, because he worked so hard, and the way they had it set up, he owed his soul to the company store, because that's how little pay he got, and all they could do is just survive. And I mean, I don't want to save people out of work and just barely scrape by. We don't want to do that. None of us would do it or be satisfied doing it. But Solomon, or the teacher, is trying to tell us that we need to look at the workaholic, look at the lazy sluggard, and look at the difference in them, and what are they both doing wrong. And we're going to look at verse 4, 5, and 6 to start out with. And Ecclesiastes, the 4th chapter. "And again, I saw that for all the toils and every skillful work, a man is invited by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. The fool folds his hand and consumes his own flesh. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind." So you look at these words, and it's sort of confusing what it's saying. You know, you're working, and your neighbors see you, and they sort of envy what you're doing, and because you're accomplishing a lot of things, becoming rich, and you're, you know, advancing. And then the verse 5, it talks about the fool folds his hands. In the Hebrew writings, if you read it, a man that folds his hands during the time of labor and that is lazy. He doesn't accomplish anything. He doesn't get anything done. But verse 6 sort of sums it all up, and it says, "Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind." So what it's saying is, you have enough to get by with, enough to just satisfy your needs and maybe a little bit left over. You don't need to have both hands full and grasping for more. That's not the way that we ought to be heading. Now the next section we're going to go over is going to be verses 7 through 12. This is on the 4th chapter, 7 through 12. And it's choosing relationship over riches. Now we have a choice of relationships and what we're going to do. And we're going to break it down into really three sections. This one we're going to break into three sections. The first one is going to be the lonely man, verses 7 to 8. "Then I turned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without company. He has neither son nor brother. Yet there is no end to all his labor, nor is his eyes satisfied with riches. But he never asked, 'For whom do I toil and deprive myself of good?' This also is vanity and a grave misfortune." There's one thing I feel I'm so blessed with. My sons, they have to drive 30 to 40 minutes to go home. Lucky enough, they don't do it in the morning, but they call me when they get off of work. And they get off pretty much at the same time. So we conference call. So every night, and this is because their wives aren't there, so I'm not interfering with their wife's time. So every night, whenever they come home from work, me and my sons have 30 minutes of time together. We talk and we go over things and problems and stuff, and they ask suggestions and things like that. That's important to me. That is so great, and it's so great that they respect me enough to be able to want to call me and get this. And we talk about how my work and how they were neglected. But I keep beating into them, don't worry about it. Don't do the same thing I did. So I'm not a lonely man, even though I did work hard. And I do have my kids. And I have my wife, too. she sees me on. She's on the phone with the kids, huh? She don't get the quality time I get. Only whenever they're around her, and then they're all over her. You'd think they was little kids about this big. But they love their mother. The next one is, two people are better than one person. Now you think about that. I know that. I got some things I want to do with the shed. I want to put a back on it and the front on it. And I got 20-foot sections of metal I need to take down and put up and hold. And I'm pretty amazing, but I'm not that amazing. I can't hold it and screw it in and stuff like that. And I can't ask my wife would do it. Seriously, she would do it. Me and her build a house together. But I wouldn't do that to her, especially whenever I can have my kids up there to help me. And that's what I'm waiting for. But let's read these verses here. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. And again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warmed alone? So Bruce mentioned something other this morning whenever he was bringing his lesson. See, I listen to you, Bruce. You may not believe it, but I listen. And so I pulled out a couple of verses, and I want to read them. Mark 6, 7 through 9. Mark 6, 7 through 9. And we're going to see that Jesus sent his apostles out in twos and pairs, or threes in some cases. But it says, starting with verse 7 in chapter 6. And he summoned the 12, and began to send them out in pairs, and gave them authority over unclean spirits. And he instructed them that they should take nothing on their journey except a mere staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals. And he added, do not put on two tunics. So don't put an overcoat on. You don't need it. And he's telling them, you're not going to need anything on this journey. You're going out to work for me, and everything will be supplied by me. He didn't say it in words like that, but that is to be understood. He sent them out to do his work, and he told them what they could expect. Also, I want to read another one in verse 12. It says, though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a third full cord is not quickly broken. So I went on and I looked from Luke, the 10th chapter, verses 1 through 4, and I probably should have went one more verse, but it says, now after the Lord appointed 70 others and sent them in pairs ahead of him to every city and place where he himself was going to come. And he was saying to them, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest. Go, behold, I send you out as lambs in the midst of wolves. Carry no money belt, no bags, no shoes, and greet no one on the way. He was telling them a lot of things. You don't need anything. You're going to go out here and you're going to do this thing. But be careful whenever you're on your journey, because it's not a very safe world. You need to take things with you. Verse 5 actually mentions that. We're going real quick, guys. We're going to be done. You're going to be able to go home, and who knows what you're going to be able to do. But the third one, choose influence over popularity. And some of these verses was really kind of hard to interpret and break down and figure out. But you know, the teacher thinks about political powers and different things like that. But choose influence over popularity. And we're going to read verse 13 through verse 16. Better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. For he comes out of prison to be king, although he was born poor in his kingdom. I saw all the living who walked under the sun. They were with the second youth and stand in his place. There was no end of all the people over whom he was made king. Yet those who come afterwards will not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and grasping for the wind. I read these verses and I started thinking about a couple things. The first, verse 13, it says, better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king. Now, if you were thinking in the Bible, if you read the Bible and you think about an old, foolish king, who would you think of? How about King David in his old age? He didn't see his youngest son getting ready to take over the kingdom. And he had to be warned by his wife and told that what was going to happen. But you know, he woke up and he got it handled. The other thing is it talks about someone was in prison coming out and becoming a leader. And the one I thought about there was Joseph. Joseph was in the prison. And he came out and he became the second one in charge of Egypt at the time under the Pharaoh. And I said, you know, I'm not saying that's who this means, but I'm just thinking what they're talking about. And then it goes on and it talks about people not being happy or satisfied with what they got. I know as a supervisor, when I was a supervisor and I first got started, what I liked, the people that I had work for me, and I'd request them. I wanted all the troublemakers, all the people that gave the other supervisors headaches. I wanted them to work for me. And I asked for the ability to make the corrections that needed to be done to straighten them out. And they actually gave me those leeways and they actually backed me on them. So I had all the troublemakers, the guys who didn't like to work, the guys who did like to work but complained, and the ones that complained all the time and didn't do anything. But I ended up with these works. The crew that I had became the most productive crew on the plant side. We broke records on rebuilding pumps and different equipment all over the place. We actually cut the times not in half, not a quarter of the time. Sometimes we took pumps that normally took a week to take out and put back in and get it done in a day. And they were sitting there just in amazement. When I left, the crew got dissolved and everything sort of went down. They said, well, you spoiled them. That's the reason why it happened. And they're right. I did. I spoiled them because they respected me and they trusted me and they did what I said. And if they didn't do it, I'd do corrective action on them and take care of it. And I think about us in our lives. We sit here and we got a few commandments that we're supposed to be doing. We got a few things in our life. We have to go out and we have to serve God in the way He wants us to serve Him. He wants us to put Him first. He doesn't want us to say, "Ugh, I really don't feel good today. I don't think I'm going to go to church at all." And don't go to church. You walk and you see somebody and you talk to them. And you tell them about God. My God. That's a new thing I've started. This is a good one. I walk up to complete strangers whenever I'm walking the street. And I walk up to them and pet their dog or whatever it is. And I said, "I'd like to tell you about my God." And the guy goes, "I go to a Catholic church down there." And he said, "Seriously, that's what you get. That's the first response." And I said, I'm not trying to push religion down there. I said, "I just want to tell you how important God is to me." And that's how I've been handing out these little handout things, these little bulletins. It's easy for us to tell people about God. If you can't do it in words, your actions and your deeds that you do is important. Those little things that we have in the handout, maybe people will take them from you and then throw them in the trash no sooner than they walk away from you. At least you made the effort. And that's what God wants from you. It's just to take the time to tell somebody about Him. You know, what would happen? What would happen if Jesus, whenever He was told to come to the earth, you know, God told Him, "You know, I need you to go down to earth and you're going to have to go through a lot of pain, suffering, and then I'm going to take you and I'm going to nail you to a cross. And you're going to hang on it and you're going to suffer and you're going to die. And people's going to make fun of you. Then after you get done, most people will forget all about you." And that'd be tough. He knew that. Nobody had to tell Him. He knew that's what was going to happen. But He did it because of the few that was willing to accept what He did and realize how important it is. I'm far from being perfect. Boy, am I far. About as far as you can be. About as far as it is to Japan. But anyway, it's something we need to work on. We have to work on this all the time. I love the church. I love the people here. I love God. And I love a Savior that was willing to die for me. I think everyone is a member of the church here. And we need to dedicate our lives more to God. We need to put Him further ahead of us. The way that Dick worked and the way I worked whenever we were younger. The important thing for us was to build a retirement, to make money, get the things I'd like to have. Well, I've got a real important goal now. I need to work to be able to get the big prize at the end, to have my home in heaven. And this is what each of us should do. We have to realize to put that as number one thing in our life. Put Jesus first in our lives. So that's my lesson, guys. If there's anybody who has any need, the opportunity is yours as we stand and sing the invitation song.